you're looking for one of the most beautiful and playable custom acoustics on the planet, look no further than Ed Rice at Toe Ear Guitars. Ed is a true artist, transforming exotic woods into magnificent, sweet-sounding instruments. Go to toeearguitars.us, that's toeearguitars.us, and contact Ed today.
Hey everybody, Brad and I want to say thank you for listening and thank you for the support. Please continue to listen and share this podcast on all platforms that you can.
And if you'd like to support us monthly, we're set up now where you can go to anchor.fm/Top Hill Recording, hit the support button, 99 cents, $4.99 or $9.99 per month. Any amount would be greatly appreciated. Now back to the podcast. Top Hill Recording, episode 131. What's up, Neil?
What's up, man?
Oh, we got another great couple guests here tonight. Before we introduce them, though, tell us what we're having here to drink.
We're actually, believe it or not, having Bullet.
Bullet. That's been on the podcast quite a bit.
Yeah, lately in particular.
Yeah. So our product doesn't match our bottle.
Nah, man, that's just
like
a bottle.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll probably have a few more that look just like that in our future.
All right. Well, man, we got Austin Miller and Brody Hilligus with us tonight. Spinoza, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey. Welcome, guys. We're glad to have you here.
Thanks. We're glad to be here.
Appreciate it.
For sure.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers.
Let's get going here.
Cheers. All right. Cheers, fellas.
Cheers.
Cheers.
It's an empty glass, man. You can hear that.
Yeah.
All right. Bullet's always pretty good, you know?
Got a little, you know, just enough.
Yep.
But it's almost gone. There you go.
Almost gone. Oh.
Just like
finished?
Almost gone, just like your mailbox.
Oh, well, not there.
Didn't take long.
Yeah.
You were very kind. You're like,
I like how Austin said he barely bumped it.
He's like, oh, some water in the trunk. There's metal scraping.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't aware of the damage I did.
Come on in your microphone there, Austin.
I wasn't aware of the damage. At least not at first. And then I turned around and I was like, fuck.
Well, believe me, every time the road gets plowed in the winter, that mailbox goes down. So it's not the first time it's been on the ground, believe me.
Yeah, once you said that, I was so relieved. I was like, thank fuck.
All right, so we're going to start off. We'll start off with you, Austin, since you knocked my mailbox down. Why don't you go back to childhood and share with us your early memories of music, and then maybe where you realized music was going to be a big part of your life.
Okay, sure. So I've pretty much always listened to stuff. A lot of my earliest influences was pretty derivative of my uncle, which is actually his father. It was pretty derivative of his taste, as well as the stuff he would turn my brother onto. So like a lot of, you know, like you got the classic rock stuff, like the Jimi Hendrix and shit like that. You got some of the punk stuff, like the Ramones and the Misfits, the Clash. You know, a lot of that stuff had a super early prominent influence on me, and I've always liked it, and I've always listened to it and shit like that. But in terms of like actually playing, like when I was a kid, I convinced myself I wanted to learn how to play bass, because I had a buddy who lived up the cul-de-sac from me, and he played guitar a little bit, and he's like, why don't you pick up the bass? And I was like, all right, because it was the only thing open. I couldn't play for shit, but I did like the whole like rock school thing, affiliated through the moms and Jeff.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, somewhere my mom has a video of me doing it, and I was like a little kid, and I mean, it was fucking horrendous. Like, I couldn't play at all, and it's crazy. Like I couldn't keep time, which is pretty insane.
How old are we talking here?
Oh, dude, I was like fucking like 9.
Okay.
I mean, like I was young. I was young. And then
big bass guitar.
Yeah. It was big. I mean, I was a chunky kid, but I think it was bigger than me. Like fucking filled out my torso and shit. It was crazy. But anyway, so I tried to do that, and I remember like, you know, like you do the whole thing like where you're listening to the music and like you're rocking out, and like I couldn't play the stuff, but I play along anyway, you know, so it wasn't plugged in. But anyway, so I did that. And yeah, like, but yeah, you know, I was having a good time. Kiss was another huge thing. Alice Cooper, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like Snoop Dogg, shit like that. As far as hip hop goes, yeah, Foo Fighters, another one, Nirvana. So, you know, just a lot of that shit. And anyway, so then it's funny too, because his first instrument was actually drums. and we're cousins. So he's a little bit younger than me. He's like 2.5 years younger than me. But his father played drums a little bit. My brother bought a kit. And my relationship with my brother is pretty interesting. So he worked for my grandfather on the weekends. He has his own like welding company and shit. So my brother found out that I was playing his kit when he wasn't there and got pissed. So he would disassemble the kit. So I learned pretty early on, like this would have been like, I was probably about 12 or so, but I would go in there and find a way to reset up the kit, reconfigure it just so I could sit there and play along to music. But that's something that all three of them were able to do, like sit down and kind of play a beat and shit. And I was like—
Did you take it back apart before you got home?
No, I'd fucking leave it. I was like, evidence and all, like your mailbox. Like, I left it where it was. But like, you know, my mom was real into it. And she was like, you know, this is good. It's a constructive hobby for the kid. Like, let's let him do it, you know? And I kind of picked it up a little bit. Started taking lessons maybe around like 14 or so. But, you know, I would just listen to shit and like try and decipher what was going on and kind of like replicate it. And then I just started like listening to it and just kind of reacting, you know? So it'd be like, disregard this drum beat. I'll just fucking play what I want to play. So I kind of formulated a bad habit of that as a kid and then got a lot more serious about practicing and shit. And then throughout, you know, I'd say like 14 onward, I did a stream of different bands and shit, like in high school and stuff. Did a lot of shows, did some cover stuff, did some like original like pop rock type stuff around like Louisville, a little bit out of town stuff and just shit like that.
Okay.
So I've been playing for a minute. But as far as music goes too, like it's always like the thing that I'm always thinking about. Like I'll literally like be at the job, you know, just like doing the 9 to 5 and I'm fucking not thinking about the customers I'm helping. I'm thinking about like, okay, like we're going to get together and work on this arrangement, you know, shit like that.
Yeah.
So it's been the constant thing, just like rolling.
I was going to ask, it's like, you know, how do you go from the bass, then you pick up the drums and then you realize, you know, as the drummer, you're always the last one at the gig breaking down stuff, but it makes sense because he never broke down
any stuff.
He didn't break down anything. He just packed it up, set it there, man. The hardest part's the breakdown at the end of the show. Otherwise, you might be a bass player still.
It's funny you say that because like it's such a disciplined thing, you know, because like there's so much that comes with it. Every fucking piece of the instrument requires another piece of hardware, right? So, I mean, even with memory locks and shit, it's a pain in the ass. You got the cymbal bag, you got the stick bag, you got all the hardware, the pedal bag, like everything. And I'm super meticulous with my setup. So like, I never, for the most part, knock on wood, I have like a list I go through and I'm like, well, I have this, 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 and this. So it doesn't take me long to fucking set the shit up or even tear it down and put it in the bag. Yeah. But the lugging, like, it keeps me in shape.
No, I don't need your help setting up.
Yeah, no, I'm not like that. I'm like, if you want to grab stuff, that's fine. But like, I do this thing, like, I don't know if other dudes do it, but I do it because like gear's expensive, you know? But like, I always take the cymbal bag on the stage with me and I don't put the cymbals on the stands until like, that's the last thing I do.
Absolutely.
And then I take them out, like off the stand, put them on the bag and then it goes. Nope. Like, because people come up, like sound guys are like, you need to go off stage. I'm like, give me 6 minutes, fuck off. Like,
Yeah.
I mean, I tell you, drummers are definitely all have their system, but I've always been pretty adamant that everybody can leave when we're done with the drummer's stuff. I always help break down. That's just something. Yeah. And
that's a good bandmate.
I've gotten to the point with, especially like with Aaron, we got to the point with him to where I could set his stuff up and break it down, put it where it goes. He wouldn't know if he set it up or I set it up.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
But
that's a good fucking band, man.
Well, oh, yeah.
I don't know if I'm a glutton for punishment. But yeah, dude, I just always... I think the biggest thing is I've always played in bands. I've never had like a three-piece drummer. It's always been this crazy rack mount system with all these drums. And it's not like I play hard rock that needs all this stuff. So it's just this... You know, I always tend to have melodic drummers.
Drummers like stuff.
It's actually interesting to me that you say that because for like minus, so that kit that my brother had, it was like a Pearl Forum and it had a 10, a 12, a 13, and a 16. So on that kit, when I was playing on his kit, like learning how to play and shit, I just left it as is and I was like, whatever. But then I actually ended up, my mom bought the kit for me and she was like, here you go. Because my brother, once I started learning how to play it, he's pretty spiteful and pretty bitter and he was like, fuck it, I don't want anything to do with it. So then my mom bought it for me and she's like, all right, here you go. So then I moved it into my room and but from that point on like it was always a very simplistic four-piece setup, like one rack, one floor, you know, maybe a ride, hats, maybe a crash or two, but like, you know, that is what it is. But now it's at the point, I just recently bought a new kit back I think in April or so, and it's a fucking 8, 10, 12, 14, and there's a 16 inch four tom as well. It's sitting in my closet, I haven't even played it yet, but so but yeah, like as I've gotten older, it's like, well, now I want more voices, you know?
Yeah. But, yeah. You know, it's mastering the little things, being simple and getting the
the real simplistic stuff nailed.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight you'll be playing a 16-inch kick.
You know, it's funny that you say that because for the longest time, this was dating back to 2018. This was in fall 2018. I purchased one of those Ludwig Breakbeats kits by Questlove.
It's
a 16x16. So it's a little bit longer than that one, but that was my main bass drum. And like I did that. I played the hardcore shows with like punk bands. I did rock stuff. I'm not a metal guy at all, but I even did like heavier stuff like that. I've done like progressive stuff on that. And for the long time while we were gigging, and even during some earlier recordings under the moniker we had before now, you can hear most of that kit, like a kind of Frankenstein, a couple kits together. But that was the pulse. That was the heartbeat.
Yeah, dude,
that's 16x16.
That's the Questlove pocket kit behind you.
Yes, sir. I'm excited.
So, Brody, where did it all start for you?
Kind of like Keith said, my father had a pretty big, pretty good musical taste. My mother did too. They are products of the 80s, growing up in the 90s. So, I got a lot of Nine Inch Nails and Faith No More. My father loves like the gimmicky, like... glammy stuff like Alice Cooper and Kiss. I really like Alice Cooper. I think he's a fantastic songwriter. So like Mike Patton, Faith No More, Alice Cooper, that was kind of the stuff. Misfits and Glenn Danzig, that kind of stuff when I was growing up. And then I got really into like Nine Inch Nails and that kind of stuff as a teenager. I started listening to more like hip hop stuff like in middle school, like MF Doom, Tribe Called Quest, and really get into like the production side of stuff. But my first instrument was actually drums. I was about 5 years old. I had like a starter Ludwig kit. My father really liked drums. So it was like the first instrument I was like brought into, you know. Then as I started getting more of the hip hop stuff, and I wanted to be Trent Reznor when I was like 13 years old. I wanted to learn how to learn all about modular synthesis and electronic recording and all that kind of stuff. So I torrented in middle school Fruity Loops off Pirate Bay.
I did the whole system.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, dude.
I got the crack, which is like the access code. So you don't, but I didn't do it properly. So every 2 minutes I had my virtual synths would cut out for a minute of silence. So my recordings always just had these dips of just like 808 drums and no synths. It was really, really embarrassing. I used to upload it to SoundCloud and hope no one would notice. Then I had my first like music education class in middle school where they would actually sit you down and like, this is A, B, C, like on a piano and some basic guitar stuff. And I was like, wow, this is how they do it. Cause I always loved music as a kid. I always loved like, you know, listening and exploring and experiencing music as an art form. But I never knew how they did it. Like I always felt like anyone who could play a piano was a wizard. Anyone who could play guitar was a wizard. Like I didn't understand anything besides kind of like drums. Like, okay, you can hit stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. So after that music class was like, I really want to start like doing this like more seriously. I got a Machine Micro from Native Instruments, which is a all-in-one like drum machine sampler. Started like putting together recordings like that on my own. My father and my stepmother got me an Akai Miniac synthesizer when I was 13, I think. And I just started piecing stuff together. When I was about 15, I started picking up guitar. And I've just been doing stuff ever since, always trying to get, you know, to the next stage with recording and writing and playing and always just trying to get it up there. But I really like Elliott Smith too. I should probably say that. Elliott Smith and Trent Reznor are my number one and two.
It kind of makes sense when you say that, just listening to what I've had access to listen to, because I think did I listen to the Red Cloak? I think that's the only thing that we're playing tonight that's actually on Spotify. So,
yeah.
But you get that vibe, man. I was thinking very like synthesized, trancey type of feel vibe to some of the stuff that you've got right now. So Elliott Smith and Trent Reznor makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Big time.
A lot of sense.
And you you play quite a few instruments, correct?
Yeah.
So what all instruments do you...
My main instrument's the piano, for sure, at this point. My first instrument was drums, but I'm not like at the level he's at anymore, you know? I can like do a few beats, or if I need to play something to get out of my head, like to record it. But it's definitely piano. Synthesis and electronics and stuff is right up there with it. I've been doing that forever now. And then guitar for the last like 6 years, probably. I've been trying to work on like vocal stuff too, because just like writing songs and stuff, getting older, like I wanted to be the one to do that. So,
yeah. And have you guys been playing together since way back in the day?
Or? We've been playing together now for probably about going on 5 years at this point.
Yeah. Like when he was in high school doing those bands and stuff, like, we played a couple times together. Yeah, we would, phone recordings of it.
Yeah, we have some shit like dating back to like, you know, like 2013 stuff. Yeah. Like he'd be doing some like really cool, crazy synthesizer stuff, and I'd actually be playing his kit in his bedroom and shit, you know? So like we do stuff like that, but like on a very like serious, like this is what we're doing, like in terms of it being a regimented thing.
Yeah.
It's going on 5 years.
Five years, yeah. Like 2018.
But Spinoza is pretty new, right?
Yeah, we rebranded earlier this year.
Yeah, okay. we used to call it Strange Parallel, and that was from an Elliott Smith documentary, actually. And it was a lot. The recordings we had out, we had this EP that was like this hardcore, like industrial, like heavy guitar stuff, which we kept some of the guitars, but it's not like screaming, and it was all these like cryptic lyrics in Latin, and like just like really... just upset.
Yeah, it was some like headspace. Really heavy shit.
Yeah, and we were like, "Ma, we want to go further, so we should probably change route."
Yeah, we rerouted quick.
Yeah.
We performed that shit live for a little bit, and we've always, for the most part, had a pretty stripped down like live setup because like the band has always literally just been like him writing the stuff, and like we'll work out the arrangement, figure out what the dynamic needs to be and shit like that, and then we'll just, you know, take it live for those that want to indulge. But we've had a couple different like people that we know from like high school and stuff come out and play guitar and shit like that, but we've only had one that was brave enough to bring it to the stage, and he performed one show with us at Magbar. This is like circa 2019, I believe. fall of 2019, and he dipped after that. So he's like,
I'm too sad.
Yeah, but it's kind of interesting though, because like considering the fact that it's literally only been him and I for going on almost 5 years now, it's gotten to the point where I've really had to learn how to just, you know, like not just have the drums be the foundation in terms of volume, but like just learn how to react in a more musical sense so I can complement what he's playing. So it's gotten to the point where he's far more... just solid and prominent on other instruments outside his main being piano. So it's been a really good challenge, like in the best way, by having like a limited lineup.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, we definitely had to try and figure out like what would be best live, you know, like with instrumentation and songwriting.
Well, and I think with, you know, with two people, you can definitely get caught in a lane that is, this is a two-man band. This is what you sound like, you know, because before, like, I don't know, White Stripes, Black Keys, that just wasn't something that happened often. It was almost more, if you saw it, kind of a novelty. And I don't know prior to that if people would take you like seriously.
Yeah.
And not talking about you guys, just a two-man, you know, a drum and a guitar, you don't think that this is going to do everything it needs to do. But then it's like, it hits you in a different way for some bands. But which kind of leads to the point to get to you guys, to where you're able to do that immediately, be taken seriously, not have to add any other instrumentation if you don't really want to, and learn how to make a different type of two-person thing, you know, to where it's not all... Because, you know, just listening to the stuff that's on Spotify, if you all stuck to the two guys... You're going to make music that doesn't sound like anybody else that does that.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of it's cool, but it also gives you the option to go, what do we really want to do? Do we really need the next thing? You know, especially because if you're starting to do more syncopation in your drumming and things to make your instrument bigger to fill the space that you generally have to fill.
Yeah.
You know, and have that ebb and flow of what you're doing versus what I think it's just cool that you can possibly create a newer thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, thanks.
I appreciate that, man.
Yeah, because we've always had to do it out of necessity, but like once we kind of rerouted and came up with a new name and more of a different sound, we really started to make it work. And it definitely like it feels a lot more natural than it used to. So
yeah. There was a while like where, you know, like anything else, was a real like trial by fire process.
Yeah.
But it's gotten to the point now where it's not hard at all for the two of us to kind of find a distinctive groove, you know, like internally. So, It definitely kind of works in our favor at this point.
Yeah, well, that comes with time of playing together and also like figuring out the sound itself.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's kind of like a, you hit a certain point where you go, all right, our confidence, you kind of mentioned it, talking about Brody's instrumentation, how he's getting better at everything and expanding where he's not just necessarily good at the piano, but can adequately do everything else. That continues to expand what you can do, especially, you know, you talk about when you started basically at Fruity Loops to where we are now. Technology has advanced so quickly to get to the point where Novation, all these different things that you have at your fingertips to create more than just a drummer, just a drum and a piano, and you can layer this stuff and do separate things. So it's not a necessity anymore to be like, all right, what is, we have to have these separate instruments, you know, you like the Roots on, what are they on? Fallon?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So they have, you know, 12 people. Well, they can, they can, they have the access to everybody. That's amazing. And in your situation, you can have that type of ability to create that sound without having to have all those personalities, which is always fun. And, you know,
makes the rehearsal a lot easier.
Yeah, no kidding.
You're only relying on one other dude to show up.
Yeah.
Do you guys do all your own recording?
Yeah. Everything that's on Spotify and the stuff we sent you guys was all recorded on Logic Pro X on a 10-year-old MacBook. I got a Scarlett 18i8 module, and we recorded all through there. We used to rent out a building in, where was that?
It was out in Oklahoma, off exit 127.
Yeah. yes. And it was just a little concrete room. We just put some basic like soundproof stuff up and just had like one mic for guitars and everything. And we went to Doo-Wop Shop over in Louisville and rented drum mics. And I just did as much mixing as I could. I really wanted to get someone else to mix it, but I couldn't find anyone because we wanted to put something out this year. We couldn't really find anyone in time. So I just mixed it. And then I hit up Colin, who's someone I went to high school with. He's in a band called Pleaser over in Louisville.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, hey, who masters your stuff? Like, your guys' stuff sounds really professional, really good. He sent me Cole Clark's contact, and Cole Clark mastered our stuff. And that's how we did it. Yeah.
You got quite a bit of attention from that first single you put out, 10 Spaces.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how were you guys, how did that come out? And, you know, what were you guys thinking as all that was going on? Because you got quite a bit of, you know, local attention and radio play and a little bit of press.
Yeah, it's funny. I always feel like we're like, God, no one likes this. We should just give up. That's always my inner voice. So that's really flattering that you would say it got all that attention. And it really did. Like when we used to release stuff before, like it, we don't have a lot of friends or anything, so it wouldn't really like go anywhere. So releasing it this time and seeing like we got on WFPK and the YouTube video got like, it's at like 400 views now. That's a lot more than we ever had before. So we were like pretty ecstatic. It was really fun. It was really like a validation, because for a while they're doing the stuff, like all that like weird Latin lyrics and stuff, and like no one was really, you know, clinging on to that. We were kind of like, man, this is kind of hurting my ego. But then we did this stuff and it was like, it actually was like a nice validation to keep going and not give up, you know? And it's like, you know, you can find people that'll like and listen to it. And
well, it seemed like people were, you know, intrigued and their attention was caught by the video also.
Oh yeah, the video. Yeah.
Yeah. So where did those ideas come from? How did the video come to be?
The video is, I always love when we play it live too. I'm like, oh, we have a video out with a gimp man like marrying his corpse bride. I always love seeing the audience reaction to that. that was from me. I used to work at the Kroger gas station, and I would just work alone the whole shift, and I would just like sketch out ideas I would want for a video and stuff. And I came up with this like character of like a guy in like a gimp mask with like a tuxedo, and like my dad actually has this like 4-foot tall skeleton Halloween decoration. I was like, man, wouldn't it be funny if we put this bride outfit on the skeleton? And I have this friend, his name is Zach, who I went to high school with. He's pretty tall dude, you know, his stature fits really well. He's skinnier, so, you know, he really would get like a tall, like ominous shape down. It really came from just wanting to make something that could like capture people's imaginations and capture like, I really like old horror movies. Like I really like old school, like Night of the Living Dead and all the classic Universal stuff and John Carpenter's Halloween. I always liked we've all seen that, right?
Everyone. Is that Michael Myers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that first movie.
I always get Jason and Michael Myers mixed up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the first Halloween is really an artistic, beautiful piece of cinema. Something I always liked about it was just the anonymity of the mask and the shape walking around in backgrounds and stuff. And it's just like this blank, expressionless thing that's just always there. And I was like, that always inspired me to like, because I like old school horror. So I always wanted to do something like that. And music's my main thing. And we wanted to do a video this time to have like something else out there, like a visualizer. And it kind of just like, it just kind of came to me. I drew it. And then we went to a few different BDSM stores in Louisville looking for the mask.
That was quite a trip, by the way. Yeah. The Love Boutique especially.
The Love Boutique. Yeah, Love Boutique. Pretty wild. We had to settle for a Theater X in Clarksville, Indiana. They definitely didn't think we were doing a music video. We'd explain that. They'd be like, we know what you mean.
We know what type of video you're doing.
Yeah.
Who's the ball gag for?
Yeah, exactly.
Especially that fella at the Love Boutique. He was like, you boys are looking to have a lot of fun.
Yes.
And he's like, you'd be surprised by the stuff I've seen. It's crazy. And we're like, yeah, it's for a music video. He's like,
no judgments, he says.
He's like, no judgments, but I bet it's for a video.
Oh yeah.
He was getting into it.
He wanted to be in the video.
Hell yeah.
Oh, he
yeah.
did. I think he wanted to be the get man.
So you guys mentioned earlier, so Spinoza just started early this year, like 2022. Is
yeah,
that right?
Yeah. We switched the name over and came up with the art and everything this year. Yeah.
Let's listen to a tune. Tell us about All But Forgotten.
Yeah. This one has a lot of kind of like field recording-esque stuff, ambience. We went to our local park over in Clarksville and just, it was like 6 a.m. and we just set up our little mic and recorded a few different spots, getting some birds chirping. It's definitely a song about, coming to terms with failed relationships, lost friendships, and your own destructive hand that played a role in the end of these things. And yeah, it's acoustic number.
Let's check it out. All But Forgotten.
Very yeah. soundscape-esque.
Yeah.
Got a lot of soundscape to it, man.
Yeah.
Austin, what are you, percussion-wise, what are you playing in there?
So on there, there's some congas, there's some bongos. There's those nice little cymbal swells that I use with mallets. Some of the other stuff, I don't think that song does, because we did them all in the same time, but a lot of them have those instruments, because there's like two other songs that have a lot of percussion on it too, has those as well as like shakers. There's some, another song in there later on that has maracas. So just, you know, stuff like that. Stuff, I rented the bongos and congas and all that shit from Doo-Wop, same place I got the mics from. And then I bought the shakers and already had the mallets and all that stuff. But that was quite a challenge because one of my biggest weaknesses as a musician, particularly speaking in the rhythm department, is like I've always considered myself a drummer. I guess it really comes from like a stature of my own internal limitations. But I've never really done percussion before this. Mm-hmm. And I had to find a way to do it where it didn't feel like I was phoning it in, but in a way that I felt was musically applicable. So that's kind of the best I was able to kind of provide at that point in time.
Yeah. All the vocals, is that you, Brody?
Yeah. Yeah. That's all me.
Yeah, I like the layers, man. There's a lot of layers on top of that.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, man. I'm very insecure, especially when we were recording. So I would always just try to double track and harmonize with everything to make up for my lack of vocal ability.
Well, there's nothing that can cut your vocal ability in half more than hitting a record button.
Red light fever.
I'm telling you, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Have either of you guys had lessons on the instrument you play here?
Yeah, we both had drum lessons at the Mom's Music. It's now Maxwell's in Jeffersonville, Indiana, with a guy named Dwayne. What's the last name? Smith?
Yeah, Dwayne Smith.
Great musician, great supportive teacher for young musicians. He's a great guy. For years, that's how I learned how to play double bass and everything with him. And then I did about collectively a year of piano lessons with one teacher up in New Jersey. I used to live there, and a guy in Louisville named Dave Bazanis. He has Bazanis Music Mart.
Okay.
Shout out to Dave. He's a great guy. And that's the only lessons I've ever taken.
Yeah, I also took, like you said, the lessons from Dwayne. I think it was around 14 or so, but I did lessons with him for, man, maybe about like, I don't know, maybe about a year or so. And then at the same time, I was taking lessons from him, trying to figure out how to decipher different parts and stuff. I was also taking lessons at Maxwell's with my high school band, learning kind of like how to, I guess, be the backbone for the band. Mm. So Mark was in with that. And then I took lessons with Dwayne again around the time I was 17. For a little bit. And then last year, I started taking lessons with Rob Edwards, who teaches at the Moms in Louisville. And shout out to Rob. He's been a huge influence and just a great supporter of me since I've started doing lessons again.
Nice.
And even just like the stuff he shows me, like, because, you know, there's a lot of various influences with the stuff we like. And so some of the stuff, like for the longest time, I just did like pop stuff or rock stuff, a lot of like heavy backbeat stuff. And I played like really pretty aggressively. Like I just beat the shit out of everything. And it was terrible. But like with stuff like
punk drumming.
Yeah, essentially, but like not like a Bill Stevenson or anything like that. Just like shit, you know, not even like a Robo level. Like it's not good, you know, but anyway.
True.
Shout out to Robo though, for real. But no, but on a serious note though, like a lot of the stuff, we talk about this quite a bit, but goddamn near every fucking time he comes up with like something new, it is an inherent challenge for me to figure out how I'm going to apply something that's musical. Because especially with drums being his first thing and his ability to like program and just his ear, just the way that works, a lot of times he has ideas that I don't necessarily hear. So he'll show me stuff and then I'll have to spend God knows how long figuring out what he's hearing and then find a way to facilitate my own sort of voice in a musical setting. And that's something that Rob's helped me with a lot. Like, especially doing the stuff you'll hear on a Red Cloak near the end. There's like a swing section, kind of feels like a waltz a little bit. Shit like that. Like, I couldn't even phone that in before. So a lot of that stuff independently came from me taking lessons with Rob. Mm. He's been a prominent influence on my playing.
Awesome.
Yeah. I also like to give one last shout out to, I took band in high school. And we had a teacher named Alex Smith, and he wasn't like the stereotypical like music teacher that's like 80 and just teaches you boogie woogie and then tells you to fuck off. He was really actually cared about like mentoring his students and showing them like the real love and creativity and just otherworldliness that comes out of knowing how to play music. And he had an AP music theory course that I only did the first semester for because I was an idiot kid and dropped it for an easier class where I wouldn't have to, you know, show up and do anything. Yeah, exactly. But I really feel like I learned the most about like music theoretically from him at first, and that gave me a really strong foundation to go and learn other instruments and learn about harmony and melody. So I would like to throw that in there.
Did either of you guys continue with music in college?
I went to college for a year and dropped out.
I went to college at Ivy Tech, and I dropped out initially because I went like, you know, right after high school. Didn't show up, failed my speech course and all that. And I was like, all right. Then I went back about a year and a half later, was literally on academic probation.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like I flunked out and shit. And then I went back and that time around just did kind of some different courses. So like abnormal psychology, a lot of English, a lot of lit and shit like that. And then I actually ended up receiving a certificate in addiction studies, which I received in 2019. Haven't done anything with it. I'm still just working at the ham store.
You're the only guy that didn't put bourbon in his glass.
Yeah, so. He studies me every night.
I was just wondering if you guys, you guys talked about a lot of, a lot of music classes you took starting in middle school all the way through high school. I was just wondering if you continued that in college.
Continuing now, man, without college.
Yeah, really.
I did do it in college. The year I went for college, I did music production for the first year. And it's a great program. I recommend everyone does it. I just felt like personally, it just didn't speak to me. And I kind of learned everything I needed to outside of it. But it did teach me the great power of busing for your mixes. So I needed to do it. But
I'm excited to hear you guys, how what we just listened to transfers to our one shot.
They didn't tell you?
Huh?
You got to do bird whistles the whole time.
Okay.
Yeah,
I can do
that. Yeah, you got to do that. That was good. Should have recorded you instead of the park.
Well, let's go on and listen to another one. Let's tell us about Wasted Sun. We have that one ready to go.
This one has more heavy guitars, more ambience. Definitely a bit of a darker vibe, I guess. It's fun. It's cool.
Yeah, that same building we were talking about that we recorded all that stuff in, it was like a rehearsal spot that us as well as a bunch of other musicians in the local area would do like monthly like lease rentals for and shit. So we recorded all that. But actually, dating back to probably about a year, maybe a year and a half before that, we met at the same building and rented it out on like an hourly thing. And like, so the drum track you're hearing on that is based on a groove idea that we collectively kind of came up with, and I'm playing brushes on it. But it's a little syncopated, but it kind of has this like almost like hip hop sort of influence on it. But it's pretty neat.
I was like, dude, I'm gonna jump off a bridge. We gotta write a song. And then he had that and we just came up with it.
There you go. No, and you're still here.
And I'm still here.
Speaking of songwriting, is it all collaborative? Like, how does songwriting process usually roll out for you two?
Sometimes it'll be like, hey, I have this chord progression. This is what I'm feeling. Like, give me like a drum and bass kind of thing. Give me like a cool jazz thing. It's just like a very basic, like open parameters. Then he'll be like, okay, then we'll work it out. Sometimes it'll be a demo where it's like, hey, I think this needs to go like this, and I'll record a drum machine. And, you know, if he ever wants to add anything or spice anything up, he's an actual drummer. I'm just doing basic programs for the demos. And other times it just completely comes up out of jamming. Just, we'll just be playing around before or after practice. We're like, hey, that's good. Let's capture that on our phone memos.
Yeah, which there's quite a few of those too.
Oh yeah, lots of phone memos.
I bet there's some unbelievable music that nobody will ever hear on some phone memos.
Oh yeah,
yeah, because it's easy to forget what you have in your phone memos.
Dude. Oh yeah,
new podcast. That's it. Send us your memo, your best memo, and we'll play it.
Oh, you remember good. We
Here would be an even cooler idea to add to that. What you do is you write down the name of all of them, put them in a hat.
And then
you grab it out of the hat, and that's the one that you fucking play.
Here's what we're listening to today.
Oh, number 157.
We did phone memos with somebody. We just pulled out our phone and played our last phone memo.
Yeah. Nice. See, this is one you just have people submit. All right, here's a cool one. I'll send it to your email. Play it on the thing.
Yeah, right. You'd have cheaters. They'd be doing full productions on their phones.
I just came up with this. It's like, what's love got to do with it?
Off the cuff, you know.
Like Dr. Dre production.
Yeah. All right, let's check out Wasted Sun. I've got a silly party mind. It goes on and on. It was stretched for my it's something.
sun. The rise and fall of each one, and tomorrow's gone. A wasted sun. A wasted sun. The caricature was the wheel for trucks.
Going on in the headphones on that one.
Hey, oh yeah, heck yeah. Oh yeah, that's
good. There's a lot going on here, man.
Oh yeah, especially for that sweet simple chorus, those yeah. harmonies. That's what we were trying to do, man.
Yeah, when that hit, it sounded good. Very Pink Floydish.
Yeah.
Build real well.
Thanks, man.
I felt a little vertigo there for a minute. So for our listeners who want to get to know you guys a little better, where can they find you on the socials and what's all out there to hear and see?
Yeah, so we're on Instagram. We're Spinoza period band, because Spinoza was already taken. We're on Facebook as well. I'm not sure what the at handle is on that, but it's probably at Spinoza band. And we're on YouTube with the infamous music video and Spotify, Apple Music, Tidal, just everywhere. DistroKid allows you to go.
Okay. So,
yeah.
Well, man, we appreciate you guys coming out and hanging out with us for a minute. And we're going to get things set up and do some one-shot videos next.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having us.
Thank
it was a blast.
You for having us.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to go.
I was going to say, before we go out, you're wearing a Hilfig shirt, and I think we ought to just bring it to the light. At our buddy Collie, his post yesterday.
Do you know anything about that? I just saw the post that Saturday's his last show with them.
I think that it may have something to do with he's having a baby, which is awesome. Well,
yeah.
He's not, but you know what I mean. he and his wife.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's the case or not, man, but those guys are amazing. Collie is one of the most tasteful lead guitar players there is out there. And just, dude, the rise of that group right now is...
I went back and looked at that post about 10 times looking for evidence of like a prank or something.
Like a joke. Yeah, like, I'm just kidding with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's
it. Sounds like it's legit. Sounds like he's a last show Saturday.
Yeah. So this will already be done with by them, man, Saturday.
Yep.
That would be a hell of a show to be at. And two, I got a song coming out, man.
You do?
Yeah. Here's the deal. Like one shot, we're starting to kind of release these things on Spotify. So I got one finally coming out the 26th of August. Probably already be out at this point. Thank you. You know, you can watch the YouTube video now, but yeah, that's the new kind of thing. We're trying to get this one shot Spotify thing rolling for us. Top Hill Presents One Shot, something like that.
So you're going to release the one shot song you
just
did
the one
way
shot
back?
Song. Yep.
The second song?
Yeah, yeah. So, and also with that is...
Hey, this is going to be the first release that I'm playing guitar on.
Dude.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm excited
for
this.
It's true, man. So, so that's happening. And what was I going to say about that? I don't remember the last thing.
So
was,
it will already be out. This podcast will be after the 26th. So go listen to it.
And that it will not be under Johnstone. It will be under me, Neil Johnstone. There will be a new Spotify thing coming out. I'm going to start releasing some, you know, probably everything coming out under that. So check that out. And then last but not least, and maybe most important to this podcast is, we're an hour in and you've had zero pops on that microphone, bro.
Yep, that's true.
It was the
must have been the microphone.
It was the mic. No pops. All right.
We were trying to locate something that was crackling and we thought we had it pinned down to the mic.
Yeah, I think we nailed it.
God, yeah.
So somebody can get a good deal on a Rode NT1.
How much are you selling for?
It's probably just some type of ground thing, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's something stupid.
It's, it only does it. It's
once.
Yeah, it'll do it like once every 50 hours, but when it does it, you hate it.
Yep, you do.
All right, guys, we're going to go out with This Red Cloak. Tell us about that.
It's the last one we just released. We got some Cocteau Twins vibes on it, some dreamy pop stuff. And it's something I made when the COVID pandemic just hit. It's isolated up in my bedroom, writing it, guitar, capo on the second fret. And we recorded it. It's about 2 years old, just came out over the summer, and we really like it, and we hope you do too.
And it's available on Spotify right now, right?
Spotify, Apple Music.
Bandcamp?
Not on Bandcamp, but maybe. Yeah, maybe I'll put it there.
Put it there, man. You can get 100% royalties on
Bandcamp.
Yeah,
that's where you make your most money.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
We used to be on Bandcamp. Yeah.
One time, right, guys. Bandcamp.
Thanks again, fellas.
Thanks, fellas. Thank you.
Thank you. To think that I've